Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, in this episode of Scrappy ABM, you're actually going to hear where I was interviewed on somebody else's show. We just love the content so much, we wanted you to hear it and make sure that you got it. So I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
My name is Janice B. Gordon, and this is Scale Your Sales Podcast. In today's episode, my guest talks about account-based marketing. Welcome to Scale Your Sales Podcast, Mason Cosby.
Janice, super excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very excited. You've got such a cool voice.
You're far too kind.
Mason, I've told you, you're my last recording today, so this is happy hour. And I really like your background. I think you've got us in the mood. So, and I'd really like to pick up on something that's in your LinkedIn timeline. I thought it was brilliant. And the question you're often asked is, where do you start in building an ABM program? And you started, figure out how you're going to fail first. And I thought that was a great starting point, not only for the ABM program, but literally everything you're going to do. Figure out where are going to be the blocks and the barriers, where you're going to fail, and focus on those first of all, and you've got a better chance of success. Brilliant.
I appreciate it. Yeah. It's been a bit of life advice in general. I typically get myself around people that have already done things. I ask them, so what would you want to do differently? They tell me exactly what they would do differently, and then I start there, and things tend to go a little bit better.
Yeah. And you were just saying that you've come off a sales call, and often that's what we miss in sales. We have the bright, shiny objects, don't we? And we want to talk about what's new and what's flashy, and like we want to introduce these things to our customers. And actually, it's often those kind of small little blocks and barriers. That's all they want you to remove or help them remove that. And there may be bigger opportunities later on, but it's really about actively listening to and understanding the environment of the customers and where they're failing, isn't it?
Yeah, most of our sales processes are actually very odd in this sense. The third slide in every sales deck that I ever have is, here are all the reasons an ABM program would fail. And again, for context, sell ABM services. So I try to actually talk people out of it, because if eyes wide open, this is why this isn't going to work. These are the things that, like, I as an agency can't actually directly solve. For example, sales compensation, big thing that causes ABM programs to fail. I'm not going to change the comp plan unless somebody lets me. I just can't. So just addressing those things on the front end, what we've actually seen is an increase in close rates when we started to do that, because people felt like we were telling them the truth the whole way through.
Okay. So for those people that do not know what an account-based marketing program is and why a company would implement that, just give us the kind of the highlight on that.
Yeah. So an ABM program is just a B2B revenue strategy that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success around a set of shared target accounts that are reflective of their best fit customers. That sounds really fancy. In like very simplified terms, figure out your best customers and then figure out more companies that look like them that don't currently work with you. And then get everybody on the same page to say, we're going to go get those people to be our customers. That's an ABM program.
Okay, so one of my starting points in sales was key account management. And that's been around for a long time, a lot longer than account-based marketing. But it seems to me that account-based marketing is the smarter way of marketing, focusing on your biggest, most valued customers. And there's an awful lot of marketing effort that is unaccountable. It's really difficult to track the ROI. Why aren't all companies just doing this and not any other areas of marketing? Why aren't they focusing on that? Doesn't it make sense to you?
For context, I've spent most of my career either in sales or building ABM programs. I am fairly biased to say that I think this makes a lot of sense. And when someone explained to me ABM for the first time, my immediate response was, what is everyone else doing? I agree, to speak on behalf of many other friends that disagree with me. I'll play devil's advocate here for a moment. One of the challenges with an ABM program is that
when we look at the idea of reflective of our best fit customers, ideally, you're actually doing that from a data-backed approach of these are our highest profit historical customers. And there may be, hypothetically, customers that you're not marketing to. So by focusing on an account-based strategy, you're actually intentionally excluding viable potential other customers that you've not worked with previously. So I actually think a good ABM or a good marketing program has multiple styles of marketing. So there should be brand marketing that is problem evangelism of this problem really hurts. It's like we actually do a lot of problem evangelism to talk about all the reasons ABM programs fail. And then based on that, we actually see people that resonate with those problems and then they want to work with us. We also do, obviously, account-based marketing for ourselves. We know, all right, these are our highest profit customers today. So I'm going to go get more of those high profit customers that are really happy from an NPS perspective. They send other friends. If I could get, again, you can make a lookalike list of all your current customers and go get some of more of those, or you make a lookalike list of your top 20 customers that pay on time, are highly profitable, constantly rate you as a 9 or a 10 on the NPS score, have made other referrals, and proactively help you get feedback to improve your business from a constructive, not critical perspective. If I could find more of those, I would like more of those. That's my goal typically. So again, I think it is the most efficient approach, but there is an argument to be made of what if we don't know our best customer, at which point it's fair. You should probably figure out your best customer.
If you don't know your best customer, there's a lot of waste within your business. That's pretty fundamental. And my approach to strategic or key account management is that, you've segmented your customers. So you're going to have your A's, B's, and C's. Now, that isn't a fixed point. It's going to change. And it's really about understanding how that's evolving and how that's changing and where you're intentionally wanting it to move and change. And with technology and where the markets are moving, if you're not doing that research and understanding where you might be, and it's not even 5 years, in 3 years' time with your customer base, but you can only really do that if you understand where you are now and what is key to you now. So that is your starting point. Surely your marketing would follow that. So it wouldn't be a fixed point. These are our accounts and our account-based marketing. It's never a fixed point. It's always evolving and looking for who are the similar accounts, who has the biggest potential. And it's not just measured by what the volume or the value now. It could be strategic importance and blah de blah. It's never a fixed point, and it never should be in your key account or strategic account management. So account-based marketing would evolve with that. What's your thoughts?
Yes, and that sounds really complex. So again, I'll explain what we actually have done for our own business and then what we do differently for clients. So again, I'm a 15-person marketing agency. We don't need that many customers to be a healthy, profitable, growing business. I actually need to close 14 more deals this year, and then I'm good. So I don't need a ton. So what we've actually done for ourselves is we've built a target account list that is based on our current top profitable customers. And that target account list is 2,000 accounts, which is a large target account list for a 15-person business. We look at that target account list as our serviceable market that we would like to have meetings with over the next 5 years. That is not how most people approach account-based marketing. And I know that, but it's how I'm doing it because I want to be very efficient and say, I actually know for a fact for the next 5-ish years, unless there's a massive market shift, which there may be, these are going to be the best customers. So as I run my ad programs, as I think about inviting people onto podcasts, as I think about how to create a relationship, I've taken the universe of B2B that could be argued as 500 total accounts globally. There's a lot of B2B companies. I've taken that down to 2,000. So it's easier for me to focus as a business, which aligns my marketing and my sales team and my customer success, aka my services teams, to say, oh, we love working with these companies. You're telling me we're going to go get more of them? Great. I love that. And then we are planning to do an annual review and just say, after we've now had more data on the lifetime of certain kinds of customers, does this target account list hold up? And if not, how do we adjust it? What I don't recommend, and we've got a client doing this, and I'm trying to break this bad habit. They make a new target account list for each of their sellers every quarter. And then their sellers are just pounding the phones and then burning and churning accounts. And they're calling that account-based marketing. And that is not account-based marketing. So for other clients, as you referenced, it is a dynamic approach. So what we want to do is to the best of our ability factor in first-party engagement data so that we're not just going after firmographic fits, which would be revenue, headcount, industries, but are also then tiering them out based on their levels of engagement from a first-party perspective, which means they like open your emails, they click on your content, they're following you on social. Good signs. In addition, if you can also see through third-party intent data, if you have access to it, they're searching around the internet for topics that are similar to what you talk about. So if you can marry first-party engagement plus firmographics of like they're a right fit customer plus intent, they're likely in a buying cycle, they know you exist, and they're a good fit. Those should be top-tier accounts that we're focused on. And then the other thing that if you want to get really advanced, factoring in market trends. At the time of this recording, there has been some recent regulatory changes for the U.S. economy, which has, or at the, as it relates to tariffs. And that has made an impact on the global economy. Like our stock market is tanking right now. So if you're selling in the auto manufacturing industry, your sales pitch likely needs to change a little bit because they just had a 25% price hike at a government level. Like there's no way around it. It's like imports 25% more expensive. So your sales pitch should likely be nuanced. And that could be very positive for you if you sell operational efficiency to help them actually improve everything. It could be very negative for you. So you may actually want to shift focus to a different industry or a different market if you can't sell well in that environment. So again, those are the two different approaches of being highly dynamic and actually just having specific criteria that slots accounts in and out over time. Or what we're doing is more static and thinking holistically from a brand perspective. How do I make sure that these 2,000 accounts know that we exist over the next 5 years?
Yeah, got it. Got it. Lovely. All right. So account-based marketing is often seen as a marketing-led strategy. So in your experience, what have you seen in sales teams that's worked most effectively involving account-based marketing? What have you seen a really big impact?
Simply just the partnership. So, and what I'm about to say may unintentionally offend some salespeople, so I'm so sorry. But I'm also a seller, so I've bounced back and forth my entire career. I've been in both seats. I can tell you this from my experience, is salespeople are typically only given access to people that they're given access to. So what I mean by that is if you send an email and no one responds, you don't have access. If you send an email and one person hops on a meeting and they're not the right decision maker and they won't enter you to the right decision maker, and then you try to multi-thread through email that decision maker and that decision maker doesn't respond, you don't have access. And those are direct channels. So we use direct one-to-one communication as a channel to try to get access to people, and we're blocked. That's a very hard challenge for many salespeople. Marketing, on the other hand, does not typically experience that challenge in the same way because we use what are referred to as indirect channels. So I can go into LinkedIn and upload a list of 10 accounts and have 30 contacts per account. And that's a minimum viable audience. I only need 300 people to market to. So I can then intentionally serve up ads with a variety of creatives that speak directly to a specific person or persona within a specific company through ad programs, through content, through email marketing programs. It's easier for us to sometimes throw a virtual event than it is for sales because we just have access, admittedly, to more channels and tools than sales teams typically do. So when you then recognize the importance of both roles, because marketing can't sell and sales can't market. Like they just have different functions. They can, but when you see sellers trying to market, it's radically inefficient and typically doesn't go as well than when marketing does marketing. Marketing tries to send out an email blast to the entire database. It's like, buy now, typically doesn't go as well because it's trying to sell. So recognizing the importance of both roles and their use in actually engaging an account. I gave that long-winded explanation because we've worked with many sales teams that have said, I've been trying to break into this account for 3 years. I'm just on the cusp. I don't want marketing to take credit. So I'd rather not get the help. At which point, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Get the help because marketing can create way more content on the website. They have more access to more channels that can engage the entire decision committee. And when we shift from credit to same goals, I don't care if I ever get the credit, admittedly. As long as I don't get fired and the company keeps growing, that's the goal. So like, it's a shift in mindset from marketing versus sales to we're one team as an acquisition team that's focused on getting these customers in the door.
Yeah, And I think part of that is an education role, that sales understanding what marketing is going to do, because they want the sale. And if it's going to get them access, then it's something that they would want. It's just, I suppose, it's the fear of losing control. So it's all about education, and also having an environment where sales and marketing is aligned. Ideally, they should be sitting together and it should be all one. That doesn't always happen, unfortunately. Okay, so I'm really interested in some of the practical friction points that you've seen in revenue teams and how you've overcome them.
Yeah, I mean, as it relates to the alignment piece, you actually just touched on one of them, which is control. So, again, when we recognize that, oh, marketing is going to directly engage accounts that I want to talk to that have been on my wish list, we have to relegate that we don't control the entire communication journey. And I say this very sincerely. If there are specific accounts where you're making like great inroads, yeah, exclude those. But if there are accounts that you've been trying to go after for a couple of years and you've not made progress, that's okay. That's why marketing is helpful. Marketing is better at generating awareness. Sales is better at closing deals. So again, just a respect for the roles. That's the first thing. Second thing I already alluded to was actually compensation. So I have seen this actually happen a couple of times in the past 2 years with some of our clients, in which sales leadership or leadership as a whole will use language like, we're going to build an ABM program to go up market. So they will then shift the audience that we're prioritizing. And what ends up happening is sales may actually have a comp plan that is not based on deal size. I've actually had a client that we worked with that was based on deal number of deals. So they were all a velocity and a volume game. Then we shifted the marketing program to be on deal size, less than deal volume. And as a result, salespeople worked way harder to close much larger deals and got no additional commission. That's a problem. That makes sales frustrated with marketing when marketing and sales should actually be both going to leadership and saying, we want what is best for the business. You are not incentivizing us to do what is best for the business. Your comp plan tells me to do a different thing. And then the last component is just getting around measurement. You know, when you actually break out goals as marketing sourced versus SDR sourced versus AE sourced, and they have specific goals, and then we start to fight over who gets the credit for the source. You end up creating infighting over what should be a win, which is we got a target account that was a high priority account for the business to engage in a sales conversation with us. So again, I'd look at it through those three lenses of credit and attribution, typically compensation. And then lastly is, oh, what was it? I said it earlier. It was, oh my goodness, it's escaping me. There was one other one anyway. Well, sorry, editors, you'll have a little bit of editing here. The other reason that just came back top of mind is overcoming that sometimes historically marketing may not have delivered. They may have been doing the wrong things. So when we come in and we're like, we're so excited, we're going to build a revenue program. They're like, what have you been doing previously? Oh, you're posting on social and making fun videos for April Fools, but you haven't done anything that's actually contributed to pipeline in 6 months. So there's sometimes a lack of trust that sales has. I want to say very politely, that lack of trust is well earned. If marketing hasn't delivered pipeline in a minute because they're doing all these brand programs, you're going to have to overcome the fact that marketing is talking about making a shift, that we need to make sure that like the marketing programs themselves are tied to some form of pipeline generation in some capacity. So overcoming that shift in focus and actually getting the belief that what you're going to do will contribute to pipeline is sometimes a hurdle you got to overcome.
Yeah. I just had a thought talking about alignment. Do you assess the level of alignment before working with some of your organizations and decide that actually my life is too short, that they're not sufficiently aligned in order to make this work? Is that one of the criteria?
Our first call, we have a three-call sales process. So our first call is typically with whoever booked the meeting, and more often than not, that's marketing. Sometimes it's sales. And if actually sales books the first meeting, we actually don't typically work with the client because sales is coming to us trying to help us fix their marketing program. And that is a recipe for disaster. Every time sales has brought us in, marketing hates us, which is really hard because then they become our main points of contact. So who books the meeting is actually always really interesting. The second call, we actually require marketing and sales to both be on that second call, because we're actually digging deep into their current programs and seeing how they engage with one another and just actually facial expressions. When marketing will say, oh yeah, we've been doing this, and like sales, like it's surprising how people let their guard down unintentionally. And it's typically micro expressions. It's not as overt as what I just did. But we look at the interaction between marketing and sales. And in our pitch call, again, slide three, here are all the reasons an ABM program would fail. And it's number one is sales and marketing alignment. So I directly just address it and just say, actually, given your current programs, I'm actually seeing some current misalignment. And an ABM program could help with that because we're getting on the same page, we're focusing on the same targets. But I want to go ahead and give you a heads up. If we look at why this program would fail, it's going to be this. What are we going to do together to make sure that doesn't become an issue that causes us to fail? So we actually address it in the sales process. And I'll be honest, sometimes it's hard. We actually just lost a client that had a set kickoff date, and then they went to go measure success. And sales said, marketing, I want you measured on pipeline. Like the goal for this is going to be pipeline. And marketing was like, whoa, no, we're going to be MQLs. And then it actually blew up. It blew up the deal, which hard, but also saved 6 months of my life trying to convince people to do what they should be doing. So again, we try to assess that in the sales process, and sometimes it blows up a deal, but life's too short. And I'd rather have wins and clients that are set up for success than trying to convince them to help me help them succeed.
Okay, so what is a kind of a shared, unique, or unexpected strategy that you've successfully used to enable buyers to engage and purchase with ease?
One of the best ABM plays that like anybody can run is very manual, but very accessible. And it's just relationship mapping of your current customers up against your target accounts. So I worked at a company that actually went to 30 of our champions that had been with us for 2 or 3 years. And they consistently gave us like a 9 or 10 on the NPS. So our CRO went to them and said, hey, I'm going to ask you on a quarterly basis for a referral. This is not like a cued seal. Would you be like, I'm going to actually provide you a list of names and ask you to make introductions. Are you okay with that? And they're like, yes, we love you. Thank you for making it easier for us to help our friends find you. So, on a quarterly basis, we then sent, hey, just wanted to ask. We saw in our target account list and people you're connected with on LinkedIn, you are connected with these people. Would you be able to make an introduction to any of these people? If yes, I'll actually write up an email for you to send. And you can just copy and paste and then CC me in the email. And we every quarter got like 15 to 20 referrals. And then in exchange, this was a company that had pretty significant scale. So we had like 250 customers. So we're going to roughly 10% of our customer base. If they gave us two referrals on an annual basis, we just gave them the product for free. So again, the new customer we got paid for them. The second customer we got doubled the business from one customer. That is a super simple play. It's manual, it takes time, but you can do that. And it's a very easy way to actually start to get some more target accounts. So that's one. I've got time for a second. I've got a second secret one. That's way
One,
easier.
give us a secret.
If your marketing teams are standardly sending out an email newsletter that also goes to your customers or your prospects, building a list in your email database that is segmented by life or by life cycle stage, meaning life cycle stage of customer or opportunity, plus a hard bounce, is a great way to identify people that were in an opportunity or were a customer that have moved from one job to another. Because a hard bounce is typically an indication that their email was shut down. So if you see that list, you can then search their list, go to LinkedIn, see where they now work, and say, oh my goodness, looks like you made a move. Congrats on the move. And then you re-engage that opportunity. And then if you're really wanting to tie in with your CS team, go to your CS team and say, hey, by the way, looks like Susie just left. How is that account doing? And they're like, oh, they haven't opened an email in 3 weeks. Probably try to retain that account. So like you end up becoming a hero. And it's an easy way to just double your customer base. That same company I just referenced actually sourced 30% of the revenue on an annual basis through that approach called champion tracking of just following customers from one company to the next.
Absolutely. I was going to say with the relationship mapping, I use that a lot again in key accounts. And I can say, look, I can guarantee you're not going to win that deal by mapping the relationships, you know, so from one's from your perspective and the other is from their perspective, how much influence do they have over the deal? Now, because often traditionally with many salespeople, they may have a great contact and they come back and they say, oh, we've got the deal, it's landed, but actually they have minimal influence over that buying decision. So mapping all of that out, and if you weight it properly, you can more or less guarantee either you're not getting the deal or you are getting the deal, or you can anticipate and build the relationship before the RFP or whatever comes to fruition. So relationship mapping, I absolutely love that. It creates a great deal of insight. But the secret one that you've given us, you know, it's something that I do on LinkedIn and I know lots of other people do, but never thought to do it through your newsletter. So thank you very much for that, Mason.
That would be helpful.
Okay, what's your personal value and beliefs that help to shape your approach to your professional success?
Relatively simple, actually. I thought I was going to be a pastor. Clearly, I'm not a pastor. I now do marketing for a living. And professionally, success is relatively simple when you don't live on a lot and your primary goal is to earn money to give money. Most of the money that we earn is just through me. It's not to me. So we give a lot of money. And that's the primary goal, is I build a business to give money and to fund missionaries and to fund churches. Makes life a lot easier when you lose a client. That wasn't food on my table. It was just, all right, we're going to give a little bit less right now, but we'll build up the client base and we'll give more later.
And also the belief system, we're going to get a little less now to get more later. You know, it's not something that you take personally. It's, as you say, through you. Fantastic. Yeah. What a wonderful belief and personal value. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
So how can listeners get hold of you, Mason?
So we are pretty easy to find. If you Google Scrappy ABM, there's a website, there's a podcast, there's a newsletter, and there's a LinkedIn page. And then if you would like to find me personally, just go to LinkedIn, type in Mason Cosby. There's no R. If there were an R, I'd be more fit, more famous, and more wealthy. For those of you that don't know, he's a football player. Anyway, so that's really it. So Scrappy ABM or Mason Cosby. Then we're on LinkedIn, and then just a quick Google search away.
Excellent. That will be all in the show notes. So thank you so much, Mason, for being a guest on Scale Your Sales podcast. I've really enjoyed the conversation and kind of delving deeper and you sharing your insight and knowledge and giving us a few secrets on ABM marketing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.